Welcome to Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. Got a three-day weekend, a lot of chance for you to go see movies, and we'll tell you about the new ones at your local theater. Our critics this week are Christy Lemire of RogerEbert.com and co-host of the Breakfast All Day podcast, Tim Cockshell of Alt Film Guide and Cinegods.com, and Charles Solomon of Animation Scoop and Animation Magazine. We begin with Don't Let Go, a thriller starring David Oyelowo and Storm Reid. It tells the story of a detective who has to solve a crime across time when he gets a shocking phone call from his niece, Ashley, 2 weeks after her murder.
I don't understand.
There's a crime that in your time hasn't yet happened. Your dad's gonna die. Your mom's gonna die. And so are you. But as long as you're alive, you can change things.
Don't Let Go, written and directed by Jacob Estes. It's rated R. Christy, what'd you think of it?
So it's kind of a bunch of stuff going on here at once. It is a time travel, sci-fi, police murder mystery thriller. And that is a lot. And that is a lot to put on the shoulders of even an actor as esteemed and as extremely versatile and capable as David Oyelowo. I'm not sure the time travel element really works here. I'm not sure you actually even need it. But that is the gimmicky kind of through line that is happening. David Oyelowo plays this LA police detective who discovers that his brother, the brother's wife, and their teenage daughter have all been killed. It might be a murder-suicide. There might be something else going on here. And then he starts getting mysterious cell phone calls from the teenage daughter. And there is a kind of weird conflict between the gritty realism of modern day Los Angeles and the supernatural, metaphysical, time travel, how are they connecting with each other part of it, which leads to a few kind of cool gimmicks.
Mm-hmm.
But on the whole, I was so taken out by the whole time travel element, trying to figure out how does this work? Does this work? And then ultimately, it does not work.
Well, the thing about the time travel element, only Andy Klein can figure that out. So, you know.
The greatest time travel critic of all time.
Yes. Only Andy can do that. So I'm watching this time travel thing. I'm thinking to myself, do I really care about that? No, I don't. What I do care about in this movie is that little girl and her uncle. That's a love story.
Storm Reid.
And he is going to do everything he can to save his niece from this thing happening to her. And that straight ahead, thrilling, I'm going to save my family part of this movie is the part that I love. David Oyelowo is just playing a straight up, just as dramatic as you can possibly play it. And in the way that movies of this ilk work, there have been a bunch of these movies, by the way. Frequency was one of them, I don't know, 20 years ago.
Yeah, which James I liked.
Well, I
know
like
not
movie.
All critics did, you know, but I
like that movie. I'm sorry when these movies, Nick Cage has made like 8 of them. not all of his work, but
although
when these
maybe
movies work, they work.
Go back in time and keep him from making
some of those movies.
Some of them are kind of fun, actually. But
pretty sharp. This movie originally written set on a farm with you know a white family, and the guy was not a cop and all that kind of stuff. David Oyelowo gets it, and he decides he wants to do it, and it was his idea to take it and set it in contemporary Los Angeles to make the guy a cop. Michael T. Williamson is in this movie. Tyree Henry is in this movie. And, of course, Young Storm. Now, this is the thing that David deciding to take that movie meant. It meant that all of those African-American actors and actresses got jobs. Because now this is an entirely different movie than it would have been, say, 20 years ago when they made Frequency. And to my measure, they've done a pretty good job here.
And what's cool is that you have David Oyelowo and Storm Reid, who were both stars of 2 Ava DuVernay films,
mm-hmm.
Selma and A Wrinkle in Time, now working together. And you see parts of L.A. you don't ordinarily see. Even in a cop film, you see kind of grittier and more neighborhoody parts of LA that we don't always see on film, including like the Pump Jack area,
yeah.
Kenneth Hahn, you know,
Park.
So it is inventive in that way, but I was just distracted the whole time.
About the time travel thing.
Michael T. Williamson, didn't he start as a teen actor?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was a White Shadow, was
oh,
that?
Yeah. Yeah. He goes
yeah,
back
he's very, very
that's an
long.
Academy, that's an Academy Award nominated actor there, Forrest Gump.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Don't mm-hmm. Let Go, David Oyelowo and Storm Reid, written and directed by Jacob Estes. It's rated R in wide release. The comedy Give Me Liberty stars Chris Gallust and Lauren Lolo Spencer. The film is directed by Kirill Minkanovsky. Tim, what'd you think?
Well, this little film just came out of nowhere and gobsmacked me. I almost didn't even watch it, you know, because it's on the list. It's way down there at the bottom of the list, and you have these more important films. I'm like, I'm going to watch this movie. And I'm watching this movie, and it just wrapped me. Most of it takes place in one of these medical transport vehicles. You have this young man, Russian young man, his Russian family, all of these old people, some of them with disabilities of one sort or another. It's very Desika in the way that it's constructed, because all of these people are who they are. And they have the disabilities that they have. And he's gathering them all together to take them to all the places they got to go. And it's just a mess and a nightmare. But it's the most fun and thrilling, just adventure film. There's a funeral that they have to go to, and it just goes all goofy. And he picks up this young black woman who's actually a social worker. And then he has to pick up the person for whom she's a social. She's in a wheelchair. And she is just hysterical in this movie, the way she's backseat driving. It's just this fun, fun film that was very heartfelt and kind of moving. And most of it takes place in that van.
This film is tremendous. It is far and away the best movie of the week and one of the best movies of the year. And what it pulls off is just a little miracle, because so often you make a film with non-actors and that can be so hit and miss. It can seem kind of stiff and stagey and artificial. This rings with such authenticity from the very, very beginning. You are in this van with these people and it's a thrill ride. It's like this controlled chaos, and it feels totally improvised, and there's no way that it was, because there's too much going on. This is a plot-heavy movie. A lot happens here. But you feel as if you are truly immersed with this array of people. It goes from thrilling, funny farce to just heartbreaking and intimate. There's a whole sequence toward the end that's kind of violent that I was like holding my breath. It's so intense. I do not know how this filmmaker pulled this off. It's only a second film.
Yeah.
And he had been a medical transport driver himself.
Oh, really?
And,
oh, great.
And he's
that.
A Russian immigrant. So yeah. He takes these two sides of his
and
persona
it's set in Milwaukee.
And melds them.
In the Russian community there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
in the winter
in Milwaukee. And this guy.
Well, it felt like home.
He's so genuine, this driver, because he is just so genuinely trying to make all of this work. He's just trying to get everybody where they need to be. Mm-hmm. He's got the guy on the radio is calling him, telling him, I'm going to fire you. Where are you at? And it's just, I'm like, oh, man, it was just such a good movie.
But never mawkish.
No.
Everyone is a total human being. There's no condescension to the actors with disabilities. It's people you don't see on film very often treated with a rich, full respect. It was very exciting.
Yeah.
And I really want to stop here and acknowledge this, because more than anything else, this is the reason Film Week exists, is to spotlight films like this that you otherwise wouldn't know anything about, that would go under the radar. You'd see it on the marquee at your local Lemley, and you wouldn't, what's that about? And so I really wanted to give this its due. Give Me Liberty is at Lemley's Monica Film Center, Santa Monica, Lemley's Playhouse, Pasadena, and Lemley's Town Center. This is a year where we hear there have not been very many films playing at so-called art houses that have really connected with audiences. Both of our critics saying this is a movie you really need to see. And it's funny. Give Me Liberty is unrated. It's directed by Kirill Mikhanovsky, and it's written by Alice Austin and Mikhanovsky. Again, the movie Unrated. Official Secrets stars Keira Knightley. The drama's based on the true story of British whistleblower Catherine Gunn. She leaked information to the media about an NSA spy operation designed to push the UN Security Council into sanctioning the 2003 invasion of Iraq.
So, you work for the British government?
No.
No?
This proposed war is historically unpopular.
I work for the British people. I do not gather intelligence so that the government can lie to the British people.
Keira Knightley, Matthew Good, Ralph Fiennes, Matt Smith, Gavin Hood, the director, Christie.
Very solid, totally respectable, well cast, well acted, slow burn, political thriller potboiler. And it's just so well made across the board. Not extraordinary in any way, but just really solid and increasingly suspenseful and watchable. So Keira Knightley plays this real-life woman, Catherine Gunn, who was a British security expert, and she did intelligence and translating. She spoke several languages, and she comes across this memo in which it's clear that the U.S. is trying to get Britain to help them coerce various U.N. member nations to vote for the resolution to go to war in Iraq. And it's like Cameroon and it's Chile. And the memo suggests that, like, they're going to blackmail these countries to get their support. And she realizes how, you know, disgusting that is and how illegal and how wrong. And she leaks it to a friend who leaks it to a friend who gets it to the Observer. And it is about what happens to her. And Keira Knightley is so good in this, just as the pressure mounts on her, she's so subtle in depicting this woman's increasing anxiety and fear as everything is tightening in on her. It's a great supporting cast. Matthew Good is an editor at The Observer. Ray Fiennes is the lawyer who comes to her defense. It's very good. It's solid.
It's as solid as a rock, this movie. The Official Secrets Act of 1989 is the law under which this very young woman, she was a very young woman, Catherine Gunn, when this memo comes across her desk. And that memo said, we are going to do this. We are going to blackmail them. That's what it's going to say. She does all of this leaking. This film begins with her in the dock at her trial. Yet they managed to construct it as a thriller. For a good portion of this film, after we've seen her in the dock, we're wondering, is she going to leak the memo? Are they going to find out who leaked the memo? All of these things we know the answers to. You know, but nevertheless, they construct it as a thriller and still execute that. Kudos to them for that. This story has more to do with, say, what the Pentagon Papers and what Daniel Ellsberg did than, say, the Chelsea Manning case or even the Eric Snowden case. It's a very tricky catch-22 with this law, the way it's set up. If you are suspected of having leaked a document, you cannot defend yourself to that suspicion. You can't even hire a lawyer and tell the lawyer what it is you're suspected of. That's the way they set up this sort of circular logic. She was in a trap. The way it plays out is very interesting. Anybody can look it up. But the way it plays out is very interesting.
The film is Official Secrets. It's rated R, directed by Gavin Hood, one of the three credited screenwriters as well, based on the book by Marcia and Thomas Mitchell, The Spy Who Tried to Stop a War. Official Secrets is at the Arclight Hollywood and the Landmark in West L.A. Also out this week, Bennett's War. We just bring it to your attention. Not available for critics to see. The film written and directed by Alex Rana Rivello. The film stars Michael Rourke and Allison Page. Also this week, the documentary Untouchable about Harvey Weinstein. Ursula McFarlane is the director. Christy?
So this is a film that gets its arms around a lot in terms of contextualizing Harvey Weinstein, why he has mattered, how he was able to wield such power for so long and keep so many people quiet for so long, and then ultimately what happened that broke down that power and allowed and gave a lot of women the strength and the bravery to come forward with their accusations against him. It doesn't necessarily say anything new, but you have a lot of interviews with people who are famous, like Rosanna Arquette and Paz de la Huerta, but also just women who were aspiring actresses who thought that a meeting with Harvey Weinstein, I mean, of course, why wouldn't you take it? Why wouldn't you go to his hotel room? And maybe it's risky, but you got to take a risk to make your way in this business. And even though it's, for some of these women, been many decades since he, you know, allegedly assaulted them, the emotions are all right there. They're all on the surface. And so to hear these women in their own voice, you know, talking to an interviewer and recounting their experiences with this man, that is very moving and that is very powerful. But as far as actual news, there's nothing really new here, but just seeing it all collected en masse is quite compelling.
Yeah. The film is Untouchable, new documentary. What do you think, Tim?
Well, the young Harvey Weinstein we do meet in this film when he was a music promoter. I suppose one of the things we come to know about him in this film is that he was always a brute. And he was a brute pretty much to everyone, the men too. A fella talked about him throwing an ashtray at his head.
He had one of the worst reputation of anybody in Hollywood, and that's saying something.
Yeah, our Wade Major did an extensive interview with him some many years ago. I remember him coming back and reporting to me, Harvey's insane. And I don't suppose I've ever been more uncomfortable watching women report what happened to them as I've been in this movie. Listening to these women specifically say what Harvey did to them made me deeply uncomfortable.
Untouchable, the documentary, it's streaming on Hulu starting Monday. Ursula McFarlane, the director of Untouchable. You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPECC. Coming up, another documentary I've been eagerly anticipating from Stanley Nelson, Miles Davis, The Birth of the Cool. We'll find out about it in a minute. You're with us on Film Week on 89.3 KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle, joined by critics Charles Solomon, Tim Cogshell, and Christy Lemire. Next up, Stanley Nelson's documentary, Miles Davis, Birth of the Cool. Great musicians are interviewed, including Herbie Hancock, Carlos Santana, as they remember Miles Davis, the man, as well as his music. Tim, what'd you think?
Yeah. All of that happens in this film. Stanley, a very interesting fellow, produces several American Experience docs, Freedom Summer and the Jesse Owens doc and the Jonestown doc.
I like his work a lot.
His work is very, 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 very good. And this, aggregated, is very insightful about Miles Davis, who happens to be from East St. Louis, Illinois. But the presentation of all of this information more or less works like this. Here's Miles Davis, this genius. A seminal genius in music. And Miles Davis was also this aggrieved black man, a dark-skinned black man who had good reason to be aggrieved. And Miles Davis beat up women. That's the order in which these things were presented. That's the incorrect order. Miles Davis beat up all his women. Every single one of those women, Cicely Tyson, his second wife, who's in this film here, that anger that he had somehow translated into a thing that came out in aggression toward these women. And I just feel like we need to understand that first. And then we can talk about Miles Davis, the super duper genius and all that kind of stuff, whose career lasted until the end of his life. He was innovating all the way through the end of his life.
And there's not just one Miles Davis.
There are a number of Miles Davis. He was in metamorphosis. And he kept himself juxtaposed to very young people, very young musicians. And he always let them take the lead. He would fall in behind whatever they were doing. And so when they started doing fusion, Miles was like, oh. And Miles did not look back at all. He just did not bother to look back. He also just wasn't very aware of what kind of a human being he was in the world. A quote from Miles Davis. My wife read this to me once. Miles was asked, Miles, how do you want to die? Miles, with my hands around a white man's neck. Miles Davis said that. To say that, it tells you something about what he suffered as a young black man from a fairly well-to-do family, by the way.
His father was a dentist.
Yeah, but you know, being a dark brown black man, it's hard.
Well, it's fascinating to hear even his friends talk about him or musicians who performed with him and the complexities of Miles and the difficulties of him. Charles?
Now, I found this one very interesting, but also at times frustrating because someone will come in. There's the French actress that he was apparently madly in love with for a while, and then she just disappears. And I guess it was his first wife with whom he had two or three kids. They mention her, then she disappears out of his life. And I wish that they had just kept their lines a little better traced. They've assembled an incredible array of musicians, you know, and people who actually knew him and worked with him. And they talk about his drug abuse and his violence towards women and even the women themselves. Is it his second wife who was the dancer?
Mm-hmm. Frances Taylor.
Yeah.
She's a hoot.
Yeah, who had been in the original cast of West Side Story. And he made her quit because he didn't want any competition for her attention, or I suspect for her getting attention as an artist, too. She sticks around more than most of these other figures. But I wish, again, it's interesting. I just wish it had been a little more coherent in some ways. And they don't always tell us when he's doing things that, oh, well, he was doing this with, you know, he and so-and-so were doing this, and this was new, and this kind of riff was different. Okay, when was that? You know, and then how does that transfer to other musicians at this time? So I learned a lot from it, but I felt I could have learned more.
I learned a lot, too. I did not know a lot about Miles Davis going into this, admittedly, but it does try to get its arms around a giant life and a complicated, lengthy life. And it is a little superficial in that regard because it is trying to hit every stage of this person's career over many, many decades. But I do appreciate that they give a lot of time to Frances Taylor, who is just a hoot and a half. She's hilarious, and she matches him in terms of ego, in terms of sense of self, and I guess you would have to. And every single woman, you point out that he abused all his women, Tim.
Cicely Tyson, right, who's not in the movie. I mean, she's in the movie,
but not
in the movie.
You see footage of her. But they all walked away from him eventually. Everyone left him despite his greatness.
Interesting, she's not interviewed
not actually
in the film.
Right. Carl Lumley
tells you something.
The wonderful Carl Lumley providing this raspy voice of Miles, and he's just killing it. It was wonderful.
About a week ago, I heard a musician who was playing a gig with Miles describing experience. They just start performing, and Miles isn't feeling all that well that night, and he just walks off the stage, just leaves the gig, walks up and out of the auditorium and just leaves. And never comes back. And so the next day, the review in the local newspaper, the brilliant Miles Davis makes this great statement and walks up. And so the guy, the musician, is telling the story, says, shows it to Miles. Miles just nods, said, "That's right." He ran the whole thing, as opposed to he just didn't want to play. The movie is Miles Davis' Birth of the Cool. It's unrated at the Landmark in West Los Angeles. The comedy Before You Know It, directed by Hannah Pearl Utt, who co-wrote the screenplay with Jen Tulloch, stars Utt as well as Tulloch and Mandy Patinkin. Christy?
So Before You Know It is an incredibly bland and forgettable title, especially for a movie at the end of August, but there's a lot going on here that is very worthwhile, so don't let this slip through the cracks because it's, you know, is this like a movie with Matthew McConaughey and Sarah Jessica Parker? No, this is a new thing. So Hannah Pearl Utt, this is her first film she's ever directed, and she and Jen Tulloch are longtime creative partners, and they co-wrote the script and they co-star as sisters who are in this really codependent relationship with each other and with their father, played by Mandy Patinkin, who is larger than life force in their life. They all still live in their childhood home in this brownstone above this Greenwich Village theater where they all also work. And so Mandy Patinkin is the patriarch and the playwright, and Hannah Pearl Utt is the stage manager and the voice of reason, and very buttoned down and very modest. And Jen Tulloch is sort of the wild, brash, flirtatious sister actress who wears denim miniskirts that are way too short for her. And this is not a spoiler, but the father dies early on. And the sisters discover that the mother they always thought was dead is actually alive, and she's a soap opera star.
Yeah.
Played by Judith Light. Which is a really cool bit of casting, right? Given that that's how she got her start, was on One Life to Live in the 70s and 80s. And she gives this very showy kind of aging soap diva performance. But it's what's amazing here is how Hannah Pearl Utt makes these tonal shifts that would seem really, really tricky and difficult, and she makes them pretty seamlessly. Because the movie begins, it's kind of quirky, and then it's sad, and then it's a mystery, and then it's wacky again, and then it's just totally surreal. And you are along with them. It's a very lived-in New York. The production design on their brownstone is so vivid. Like, every room is so ornate and sort of falling apart, and you feel like you live there with them, and she'll follow them through the hallways to indicate who they are and how they live. It's a really nice little gem of a film.
Yes, yes, a deaf hand as a director Hannah has here, as well as an actress, you know, as the taciturn sister with her flamboyant sister and her father, who's just this guy. You know, he's kind of a famous playwright, but also very noted as this actor. And there's a chance that one of his plays might be produced at a real theater, you know, not the one that's in the basement, you know, but they would like him to take a look at and rewrite this one scene, one thing in one scene, and he just won't do it. And Hannah Pearl just, what is wrong with you?
We know this man, too.
Oh, don't we? And then he has the audacity to just up and die, which, as you said, is not, and it just throws everything into a tizzy. And the flamboyant sister is also a lousy mother. She has this daughter.
Who's 12,
and who is the most reasonable and rational person in the entire movie. The 12-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm. Before You Know It, the comedy at the Landmark, it's unrated, the Landmark in West L.A. Neja, a Chinese animated fantasy film, Yu Yang, the director and co-screenwriter, Charles.
Well, this broke box office records in China, and I'm not entirely sure why. It's a fantasy based on a Ming Dynasty novel about the founding of the dynasty that will unify China under the Wicked Emperor, same setting that we talked about 2 weeks ago with Kingdom. But it's there are supernatural prophecies. There are enchanted seeds and eggs from the immortals. There are dragons. There are curses. And it's very hard to make any sense of. They've clearly been looking at DreamWorks and to a lesser degree Disney and Illumination films, and they're borrowing lots of bits. There are pee jokes, there are snot jokes, lots of flatulence jokes, but they really aren't telling the story, and I think the biggest problem is that none of the characters are at all sympathetic. The title character is this horrible brat who delights in tormenting people with his supernatural powers. His parents lie to him and tell him he's really the embodiment of the pearl of virtue when he's not, quite obviously. Nobody's honest, nobody's sympathetic, and it's almost 2 hours long. And a lot of it, you just feel like you're wandering some trackless wilderness.
Ne Zha is the Chinese animation film. It's at the Regal Edwards Alhambra, the AMC Santa Anita in Arcadia, and the TCL Chinese Theaters Hollywood. It's unrated. The documentary, Friedkin Uncut, looks at the life and films of William Friedkin, who did The Exorcist, among other movies. Christy?
So William Friedkin's just such a hoot. I know I keep saying the word hoot, but he really is.
Oh, yeah.
And there's so
he's
much of him.
I have to
oh,
say.
My God. Just the raconteur. He's just so brash and so profane. And yet you want him to just keep going. There's such personality there. So it is just a look back at a lot of his films, The Exorcist, The French Connection, and then most recent stuff like Killer Joe, mm-hmm. interviews with other directors like Coppola, like Wes Anderson, Edgar Wright, talking about what an influence Friedkin was, but also actors who work with him, Matthew McConaughey. We have to remember that William Friedkin created the McConaissance when he cast Matthew McConaughey as a bad guy in Killer Joe. Mm-hmm. So it's just clips of his films and him telling stories, and it's very enjoyable. Yeah.
What's the movie that with the truck on the bridge ready to that's the Sorcerer.
Sorcerers, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
With the dynamite in it.
Yeah, which has kind of a cult following.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One of the best Friedkin films. Here's the thing, I know him a little bit. I've interviewed him many times. The funny thing about it, and it's true of this movie, every sentence has at least three curse words. You know? And I remember interviewing him for a thing. I'm trying to cut this interview. I'm like, Jesus Christ, William. Come on, man. Pull it in a little bit. But he curses all the way through this movie. It's indicative of his filmmaking style, which was, I don't care. I'm doing it my way style. He cast William Peterson mm-hmm. in To Live and Die in L.A. William Peterson was a nobody, yeah. theater actor. And he didn't care. He just cast it. He's the right guy for the movie. And that's the way he made movies. Broke laws like you don't want to when you with that chase scene. Just breaking all kinds of
French
laws.
Connection.
The French Connection. Uh-huh. Just breaking all kinds of traffic laws. But man, have you ever seen a chase scene like that? So that's who he is, has always been, and is now.
And as Christy says, a great raconteur. No question. Friedkin Uncut. The film's unrated. Lemley's Music Hall, Beverly Hills. The fanatic about a rabid film fan who stalks his favorite action hero, John Travolta, Devon Sawa, Ana Golja star. Christy?
This is the worst movie of the year, quite possibly, but it absolutely must be experienced. You have to see this for yourself. John Travolta plays a man who is somewhere on the autism spectrum who is also celebrity obsessed, and he stalks this action star played by Devon Sawa and becomes increasingly insistent. It is Rain Man meets Misery. It is terrible. Fred Durst directed this. Former Limp Bizkit yeah. frontman Fred Durst directed this.
Following in Rob Zombie's footsteps.
Yes, the depiction of somebody on the spectrum is reprehensible in the way that he is bullied, he is vilified, he is made fun of, and it's not to set an example of how horribly some folks were treated. Travolta is mannered and screechy and shrill. I don't know what he was thinking. And he was in character on set the whole time. You got to see
this
it.
This a must see.
It's
the
awful.
The fanatic. Starring John Travolta. It's rated R at the Arena Cine Lounge, Hollywood. Coming up, John Horn joins us from the Telluride Film Festival. Yeah, it's where the most acclaimed films of the year play. We'll get the preview coming up.